I'm the Principal Review Officer at the Information and Privacy Commission. The Information and Privacy Commission was established as an agency on the 1st of January 2011 and supports both the Information Commissioner, which is a statutory office holder, and the Privacy Commissioner in fulfilling their legislative responsibilities. I'm going to talk to you today about the GIPA side of it, the Government Information Public Access Act responsibilities. The legislative responsibilities of the IPC are to review agency decisions and conduct, to provide advice and training to agencies, and in my case, to appear for either commissioner, and particularly for GIPA, of the Information Commissioner at NCAT, which is the New South Wales Civil and Administrative Tribunal in matters where an applicant has requested that the tribunal undertake an external review. The Information Commissioner in these matters doesn't appear for either party, but as amicus, which means a friend to the tribunal, so we interpret the legislation for the tribunal. So the role of the Information Commissioner is to protect and promote information access rights and privacy and provide information, advice and assistance and training for agencies and talking at public forums. We don't have determinative powers to order action or payment of compensation in matters. We don't provide access to information on behalf of an agency. So in other words, if an applicant comes to us, if you've refused, it's not up to us to do that. We don't provide legal advice, and we don't represent agencies or members of the public in legal proceedings. A bit about me. As Jenny said, I've been with the IPC, but only since August this year. Prior to that, I was with the Public Service Commission and in another iteration, the Department of Premier and Cabinet, and way back to my very first job in the public service, which was in the 80s, and I was at the Land Titles Office photocopying records. So it's an interesting thing. And at the PSC, I did deal with access applications. So I dealt with the GIPA applications for the PSC. So I can speak from both an agency perspective as well as what the IPC do. So what is the Act? And what does it do? The Act came in 2009. It replaced the FOI Act. When it was introduced, the then Premier said in his agreement in principle speech to Parliament that the bill, which was the GIPA bill, was comprehensively overhauling FOI regime that had been in place for over 20 years. So what changed between FOI and GIPA? An important difference was FOI was all about access to documents and exemptions to the release of documents. And as you all know as state records managers, it's not about documents anymore. It's about a whole range of things. What GIPA is about is a shift in focus towards access to information in various forms. And it uses a particular public interest test to determine that access. It's all to do with the access to government information. And there's four ways to access it. These are open access, which is on an agency's website, proactive release, the decisions that agencies make to put it out, informal release on basis of an application, or a formal release on the basis of a formal access application with fees paid. The GIPA Act does cover all New South Wales agencies, and by agencies, the GIPA Act is broader than what would be our normal decision in my world, my old world, which was government departments, universities, local government, local councils. It's also public officers, ministers and ministers' staff and state-owned corporations. So it has a broader reach. So if there is a definition of what is government information, it's information contained in a record held by an agency. That's just not a paper record. It's a breadth of things. Someone's got a phone call and it ain't me. The GIPA Act looks at what is an agency and what is a record. An agency I've talked about, it's defined in Section 4 and it has a fairly broad definition. And also, sorry, by the way, I forgot to say, it does include a court. It does include, and the health group is in the government departments. A record is any document or other source of information compiled, recorded, stored in written form or by electronic process or by any other means. About the only thing not captured as information is what's in your head and library books, which are publicly available. But otherwise, information is pretty broad. The legislation talks about a whole range of things with regard to what open access information is, what information should be considered for release, how an agency can release information informally, and how to deal with formal access applications. Section 6 of the GIPR Act means an agency must make open access information publicly available, free of charge on a website it maintains, and in any other way that an agency considers appropriate. So, what are the types of information, open access information? The current information guide, policy documents, and the policy documents, by the way, are publicly facing policy documents. So they're documents that relate to the members of the public, or it's about policies affecting members of the public. Some agencies will release internal documents, so policies that specifically are about their staff, but that's a choice. It's not part of the mandatory release, so it is a choice there. So codes of conduct, some agencies will put it publicly, some won't. How to handle internal reporting PID policies. Some will put it open, some won't. It's not publicly facing. Public interest disclosures are about applications by or advice by not a member of the public but by a public official. It also has, disclosure logs. So applications that have been received and what's been disclosed. Register of government contracts, that's one of the mandatory requirements. A record of open access information that isn't publicly available because of what's called an OPAD. This is a lovely acronym, we use lots of them, which is an overriding public interest against disclosure. And information that's been tabled by an agency in Parliament. There are some specific exceptions there. And then there's some specific regulation requirements that GIPR regs will actually require certain information to be put on websites, and in the case of councils it may be codes, plans, meetings, DAs, etc. There are a definition of things as to what is the information guide and policy documents. So under Section 7 of the GIPR Act, an agency has the ability to make government information whole publicly available. Government information is held publicly available unless there's an OPAD against its disclosure. So, and as I said before, it has to be provided either free of charge or at the lowest reasonable cost. What is an OPAD? It's something that comes up when considering releasing information. It's part of balancing for and against in the public interest. What we're looking for is the for and against in providing access to the information, and deciding what side of the argument has the most weight. There's no simple formula, it is a balancing test. It's about where your balance is. Is the reason for greater than the reasons against? So that's something that comes up both in some of the informal release and the formal access, but I'm just going to quickly touch on open access and proactive release, which are the first two ways of accessing information. This is where your agencies put out information for anybody to access without being asked for it. Then the next two categories are access where people come to you and request the information. So the first is informal and the second is formal. So a bit of an overview of what's formal and informal. Under Section 8 of GIPR, a person can make an informal access request for information. That's where you start to see some of the limits applied on what information is being made available. Agencies are authorised to release the requested information unless there's an OPAD against the disclosure. Even though the request is informal, agencies still have to apply that public interest test before releasing it. Informal requests can be in writing, over the phone, or in person. Some agencies have developed informal access request forms. That's actually handy because it gives you a bit of an idea of what people are looking for and may inform you in looking at what you might look at for proactive release in a future program. With informal applications, you can put conditions on the release. So you may limit the use, you may limit what they get. But in a formal access application, you can't do that. The information is to be provided subject to any OPADs or what we call COPADs, and I'll come to that in a sec. But essentially, you can't limit. Once you've given the information, you can't limit what a person does with the information you provide. formal access applications, which is what we see more of in the IPC and what we see in the tribunal, should be something that's the last option when it comes to accessing information. If it isn't open access and it wasn't provided through an informal access, an individual may make a formal request. There are a number of rules that come to a formal access, and I'm sure everyone's dealt with these and probably has a pretty good idea, but it has to be in writing. Someone has to pay a $30 fee. It must clearly indicate what information is being sought, and it must include a postal address for the applicant. If the application doesn't meet the requirements, the agency has the responsibility to deal with helping the applicant to meet those requirements. So you can't just say, I'm sorry, that's informal, we're not going to deal with it. You do have a responsibility. The same with, and I'm going to touch on this a little bit later, if the application is unclear, it's up to us to make a bit of a clarity around it. If you think it's something that where you think, whoa, what the hell are they asking me for? It's worthwhile giving them a bell, trying to work it out. It'll save a lot of pain and suffering later on. So the next bit about a formal access application is if it doesn't relate to you, it can be transferred to someone else. If you know that it's held by, for example, if it's an Office of Finance, the application was made to the Office of Finance and Services, but they know full well Treasury has it because that division's gone to Treasury, they can transfer it to Treasury, and Treasury would then deal with the application. There are rules for doing that transfer and about seeking consent of the applicant, and obviously fees go with that. The other thing that the GIFA accepts out is reasonable searches. Now, all the state records managers, whether you deal with information access or not, you'll deal with the searching aspect of GIFA, which is about requests have come in and someone will send out an email or a formal request and say, we've got an access application, we're looking for this sort of information. It's up to you to provide that information. You've got to do reasonable searches. The obligation in the Act is for reasonable searches. And the rules about consulting on public interest considerations, things like if there's a personal, business, commercial, professional or financial information that belongs to someone other than the applicant, an agency may need to consult. There are strict timeframes in deciding applications. It's 20 working days. You can extend it for 10 days if you need to consult or retrieve records from archives, but it is pretty strict. Some applicants who are fully informed of their review rights won't wait if you're one day late. They'll go and they'll seek an internal review even though you haven't made a decision. They may seek that review from you, they may seek it from us, they may seek it from the tribunal. So that there are situations. What then happens is that if it does, an internal review is made, it's about then a decision wasn't made, then the decision's made, and then it takes a whole lot more effort and time to deal with it. When it comes to an access application, there are a list of options or decisions that are available to an agency to make. It's open to an agency to make more than one decision regarding the information. So you could decide to release some parts of it, refuse some parts of it, or if it's a matter that is of confidentiality, refuse to confirm or deny whether you hold it. If it's large, like it's the breadth or the scope of the application is massive, involving a lot of information or a lot of time, you may seek to charge processing. You'll seek an advance deposit. You may refuse to release information until that money is paid. There, a lot of people, when making access applications, even for very broad ones, will often say it's in the public interest that we don't be charged a processing charge, and they'll argue that for everything. It's essentially everything is in the public interest and therefore we shouldn't be charged. The processing charges is an issue that's often misapplied. There is a whole lot of information on our website, the IPC website, which I'll mention at the end of this, with knowledge updates about processing charges, a whole lot of really good and helpful information if you've suddenly gone, oh my God, what am I doing with this? As I said before, access to information is unconditional. There are no strings attached once it leaves you. And, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, a formal information access application creates rights for the applicant to have a decision reviewed by you, by the IPC, or by the tribunal. If it goes to the tribunal, you can't have us review it afterwards. Once it's gone to the tribunal, there's no review beyond that, aside from an appeal. At the heart of GIPA is that public interest test, that balancing. This is what agencies have to use to decide whether to provide or refuse access to information in both formal and informal access applications. The public interest test requires agencies to weigh up the considerations in favour of disclosure, that's your first point, and then versus the considerations against disclosure. You have to remember that the Act, as a general principle, has a favourite considerations are that you should disclose. So you start from the disclosure and then you may pare back, but you don't start from not release. Under Section 12, that's the bit I was talking about, there's a general public interest in favour of disclosure. So we start with the presumption you should release it. Then you add your considerations that are in favour of releasing or not in favour. There could be one, there could be a thousand. It's undeterminable depending on what the request is. The Act gives us some examples of what considerations in favour might be. These are that the disclosure could promote open discussion of government affairs and enhance government accountability, inform the public about the operation of an agency, and ensure the effective oversight of government expenditure. This is where applicants will often argue that everything they've asked for in their application is that, whether rightly or wrongly. You can create your own other considerations that are relevant to your organisation, and you can accept considerations that an applicant puts forward as well. You do need to sort of consider or discount if these particular things they're advancing. Unlike considerations for disclosure, there are a very limited amount of list of factors that can be considered against disclosure. These are there's seven categories: responsible and effective government, law enforcement and security, individual rights, judicial prejudice and natural justice, business interests of agencies and other persons, environment, culture, economy and general matters, secrecy provisions and exemptions from interstate FOI. You can only use those considerations against disclosure if it's in the GIPA Act, but if it's not in the Act, you can't use it. There's also something I mentioned before, another acronym, which is COPIAD, which is a conclusive presumption of overriding interests against public disclosure. If it applies to information, you don't have to balance the factors. It's an absolute bar. So that's COPIADs apply to information that's cabinet in confidence. That doesn't mean stamping every document as cabinet or for cabinet consideration. If it's something that you wrote and it never went to cabinet, it may not be cabinet in confidence. But there was a decision regarding the Fire Brigades Union and Fire Brigades, Fire and Rescue, as they're known, with regard to how Fire and Rescue were going to implement the expenditure limits or the salary limitations. And the union were arguing that that was not cabinet information, but the tribunal actually found that the information about reducing salaries or how they were dealing with staffing was a matter that flowed from a particular cabinet decision of cabinet, so it did find that it was cabinet related, but that does depend. Other information may be secrecy provisions, such as provisions, I'm losing English now, Child Protection Act, the Public Interest Disclosure Act. So if there's a PID, that's a conclusive copiate. Information that's legal professional privilege, that's barred unless it's waived. And it's not for the applicant to waive it. It's for the person who holds the privilege to waive legal professional privilege. Information regarding adoption, that's off the table. So when you have all your considerations for and against, you need to decide where the balance lies. And that is something that the tribunal is very much at pains to discuss. When they're looking at particular matters, they talk about that balancing, and they talk again about the general interest of giving it out. Then they talk about the balancing for and against, and they say that you must do that, and you must be able to demonstrate that. You can't just say we've considered the public interest for and against and we're not going to disclose. You actually have to give reasons. So it's a matter of placing your considerations in order of priority and importance. So you look at what the weight is and what which side outweighs others. And it goes back again to that issue of a single decision or more than one decision. So in relation to one document, you may say that the first part of it, there's absolutely we can release it. But there's some stuff that we might want to withhold, so we may refuse to release it. And in relation to another part of the document, we may have something we can redact. So it's, or someone doesn't like that word, but redact is probably a good way. So we may be able to remove it and still provide the information. Under Section 54 of the GIPR Act, an agency is required to take reasonable steps to consult with a person who is a third party in relation to information that is in a document regarding them. So the onus is on the agency to actually consult with people on their own information and to hear their views. That doesn't mean, even if a person objects, doesn't mean that you can not release the information. You can still make a decision to release it. But remember that that third party also has appeal rights to the tribunal, and you can hold up that part of the decision till those appeal rights are over. So the type of information that where you may need to consult are personal information. So that personal information is interesting because it's not just your name and the fact that you work for the government. That's publicly available. But it might be your private email, your personal, you know, your something about you, your date of birth. There's a whole range of things. But it's not the fact you perform public functions, because that's easily findable. And that's not personal information. If it's information that's been published elsewhere, then it's publicly available and it's not personal information. So information about business, commercial, professional or financial interests of that person or an agent or an entity. Information about research by that person. Information that concerns the affairs of the Commonwealth or another state. So that's where some issues of privacy, the privacy legislation and the information access act for patients sort of have a bit of attention and they do overlap. So you need to be aware of what is personal information so you know when to consult with someone. And as I preempted myself, if there's an objection, that has to be taken into account, but it doesn't stop you making the decision. So you still have to apply your public interest test. If there's an objection and the decision is to release, as I mentioned before, the person has their own appeal rights. Sometimes an applicant will ask for everything. They'll ask for the moon. They'll ask for all the information relating to a subject, including but not limited to it. That's where you ring them up and try and clarify. So there are some circumstances where an agency can refuse to deal with an application. You'll find those in Section 60 of the Act. One of the more common reasons is the resources required. It's possible to refuse to deal with an application because dealing with it will make it an unreasonable and substantial diversion of your resources. But you have to be able to quantify that. You have to be able to demonstrate it. And you also have to give the applicant every chance to narrow their application before you do that. So you have to show the reasons why in a notice of decision you've said, no, we're not going to deal with the application. You can also refuse to deal with an application if the information's already out there. You've already provided it to them. It's open access. It's on the website. If it's not one of those reasons, you're not dealing with it, you've got to do reasonable searches. Now, this is all your bailiwick. What you have to do is show such reasonable searches as necessary to locate the information requested by the most efficient means, and only to search for the information held at the time of the application. Just because the applicant's made it on a particular date, you may have more information at a later date. You're not obligated under a formal request to provide that, but you may choose to release it informally. It's a matter for you. But when you conduct searches, it's really important to actually have a record of what you've done, because the tribunal may ask in a request for review where they've got it, you need to be able to show how you've searched for things to show that you've done that it was reasonable. What keywords or terms you used, the date range you searched in. So it will demonstrate. You need to demonstrate what you've done. One thing to note though is a reasonable search doesn't extend to searching backups, electronic backups. unless a copy of the record was already destroyed, transferred or otherwise dealt with in a contravention of the State Records Act or in an agency's record management procedures. This means, unless the information was lost in a flood, apparently there were a lot of floods, according to a former Director General of mine, that occurred in the Department of Education in Dobbo in the 70s. I think it was to do with mice eating boxes of information. So if it was lost, in a flood, fire or accident and shredded, unless you've done that, you don't have to go to the backups. But it is an interesting argument here. So there was, if you remember the old Yes Minister, there was always that wonderful argument of the flood of 1961 where it wiped out most government records. When an agency makes a decision about information access, you've got to do a notice of decision. This informs the applicant of the outcome and really all the important information, including your reasons. So the notice of decision must be in writing, include the date the decision was made, provide information about the review rights, provide information regarding a contact officer, provide reasons for the decision, findings made on questions of fact, and describe the nature and format of the information it's refused access to. IPC have a template. It's pretty good. As a former practitioner, I used it, and we used it in the Public Service Commission for every decision we made. It makes it easy for everyone if you follow something that I've seen bad decisions where it just basically said, we've weighed up public interest, that's it. And then what does the applicant know? They don't understand what it is that you've decided, and that's where they'll go for a review and create a whole lot more paperwork. So the other thing is the information must be provided and accessed in the form requested unless there are a particular exemption, unless it would unreasonably interfere with the operation of your agency, but be detrimental to the preservation of the record, interfere with any copyright issues, or there's an OPAD in providing access in the particular form in which it's sought. Generally, applicants want a copy. Sometimes they want an electronic form. I got undone once on the applicant wanted Excel that was manipulatable, and we gave them PDF. They sought an internal review, so that we gave them static Excel, and then the decision was made by the agency that that's the way we would always provide it in the future for that sort of information. If you are making a decision to not give it in the form in which it's been asked, you've got to justify that decision. The other thing is, as I mentioned before, you can't put conditions on the release. Once it's out there, it's out there. And that's one of the key differences between formal and informal. You can delete information from a record, as I said. There's the redaction on the OPAD. Or the other one is, it's not relevant to the application. If it was unrelated, you can remove it. So you can, as I said before, provide access to some parts and not other parts. You can also create new records. That often happens when people are asked for data. So you actually may create a record that provides that data in the form in which they ask for it. And that's where the information in the emphasis on government information is very different. You can take it from a number of different records and create a new record that combines it. It doesn't matter that you're not providing the records as long as you provide the information. So that's a key difference. So review of the decisions. There are a number of decisions you can make and that are reviewable decisions. So what is it reviewable? Decisions that are reviewable are reviewable by, as I mentioned before, yourself. An applicant may come back to you and ask you to review the decision. They may come to the IPC or they may go to the tribunal. If we review it, what we do is we'll look at the review, the decision that you made. We'll look at how you applied the GIPR Act and whether the decision made was justified. We won't look at every aspect of the application, but we'll focus on issues that are in dispute. If our finding is that your decision is justified, we'll tell you. If our finding is that it's not justified, we'll make recommendations about what you do to rectify any issues. Those recommendations to the IPC aren't binding, and the applicant always has the option to go to NCAT if they're still not satisfied with the outcome, regardless of what either we say or what an agency does. So I was asked also to have a look at the experiences and outcomes over the last 5 years of the operation of the Act. Last year, and this is where I've got a bit of show and tell, the Information Commissioner released a report on the operation of the GIPR Act for its first 3 years of operation. It looks like this. It's known as the Section 37 report, as that's the section under a different acronym, which is the Government Information Commissioner Act, GIC Act, and it's a requirement that this report be tabled in Parliament. The inaugural report established a baseline from which analysis, trends and opportunities were identified and assists the Information Commissioner in preparing future policies and initiatives. What did the report tell us? In 3 years, over 50,000 access applications were lodged across all the sectors: government departments, local councils, universities, ministers, ministers' offices and SOCs. 80% of those applications were for access information to departments, SOCs or ministers. 60%, more than 60% of applications were to three individual agencies. Can you guess? Good one, that's the big one. Anyone else? No, surprisingly it wasn't education. No. Roads and Maritime was the second biggest, and the third biggest is probably a bit of a shocker. WorkCover. Although that trend, I think, is starting to peter down, and I think it is education or facts that are coming into the fore now. More than 60% of those 50,000 applications were from members of the public. 45% were seeking information other than personal information, although 38% of all applicants sought personal information, and 75% of the 50,000 were released in full or part. So they got something for that, which is a pretty good trend. In its first year, in the first year of operation, so within the first 12 months, there were more invalid applications, which is the application wasn't in the right form, than in the third year. What that showed as a trend, or informed us, was that agencies are working with applicants to rectify and clarify, to change an invalid application to a valid application. The Information Commissioner has already flagged what her focus is to be for the coming years. And she's going to work with agencies to have integrated reporting to improve competencies, including needs-based training. And she's really keen on an e-learning module that will be released next year, and shared best practice. She's looking at better decision-making, consistent, greater and proactive release. So how is the Act working in general? It shows that in the main, agencies are adopting that flexible approach of the legislation, looking at timely decisions, supporting a greater release of information. More information is being made through one of the four options, which is open access, informal, proactive release or formal. There's still room to improve, and even the legislation itself is under consideration. The Attorney-General is at present conducting the 5-year review of the GIPR Act to consider whether the Act is meeting its objectives and whether the policy objectives remain valid. The Department of Justice has been coordinating submissions in the review, and the report on the review will be due next year. My bet after the election, because Parliament's not sitting anymore. Now, I've got some observations for you. I can't speak to agencies' experiences, but my observations in relation to formal access applications that end up at the Tribunal for Review tell me that, one, it's important to start from the basics when considering a request. Don't assume what the applicant is asking for. If in doubt, check with them. It will save you a whole hell lot of an argument later if everyone is clear, but you also need to reconfirm your discussions. Do that in writing and you won't end up in a hole. If you've been asked to provide information to a person who is tasked in your agency with considering and deciding access applications, remember it's not up to you to withhold it. Even if it may be embarrassing, it still may be released. The decision maker is tasked with considering information, including balancing the public interest for and against disclosure. Notice that decisions do vary, and sometimes are made in such a way that applicants can't understand the reasons that the information they've requested has not been made available. And as I said before, we have a template, which, as I said, from a user perspective, I do recommend. Looking at past requests for information access, it may inform you how to look at your proactive release for the future. If you regularly receive access requests for the same information that's released, then it may be worth making it available without the need for a formal access application. Now I'm going to put on my old hat. Under the Public Service Commission, we've got the same requests for information every year with regard to the State of the Public Sector survey. and the workforce data. The State of the Public Sector report. And, no, I'm wrong. It's the survey results that went to agencies, so I was trying to remember which one it was. The decision was made that it would be embargoed to CEOs for 1 month and then released publicly so that we didn't get those applications in the future. So after 1 year of pain, where we were releasing 151 documents, we didn't do that the next year, which was quite pleasant. But then I left the PSC, so I don't know what they've done now. Also, KIPA's not about the accuracy of the information. It's about the release. My experience in the tribunal has shown me that sometimes applicants want someone to look at the content of the information and make a decision on that. Tribunal members are at pains to explain that NCAT is not a forum for testing the truth or accuracy of the information. So when it comes to information access, you've got to keep these things in mind. Know what you have on your agency's website and how it's categorised. If you know those things, you can help people. If you also remember that one of the objects of the GIPA Act is to encourage the proactive release of government information, and that GIPA builds in a presumption in favour of information being released. Agencies should be looking at the information it holds and thinking about what you can release proactively. There are benefits to this, including not reaches listed, reducing any formal access applications, and to be a leader in information access. If you receive a formal or informal request, then you really need to follow the rules. Rules show you how to make the decision and whether to provide access or not. They provide you with checks and balances and safeguards to help you make the right decision. And hopefully, that's enough for me.
Well, thank you.